amongst the swamp and Everglades, where the big old hole in Tiger Mountain. God help the man who gets lost in the lake. I had me a girl and we crossed Georgia, but she had unfaithful ways. It made me feel I was unwanted, like the bat and the bear in Miller's game.
Bat and the bear in Miller's game.
Well, I caught her out one Sunday morning with some guy that was called Big Dave. The meanest man in Waycross, Georgia. I'd rather fight a mountain lion than Miller's cave. So I said, you're going to pay for this, baby, because I'm going to see you in your grave. And they laughed at me, and then I shot them, and I dragged their cheating, steaming bones in Miller's cave. I couldn't stand the way she did me. Well, I guess I showed her I was brave. Most wanted man in the state of Georgia, but you're never gonna find me lost in Miller's cave.
But it's gonna get harder for a whole lot of people. This here little town's gonna burn. What I mean is gonna burn the conscience of the country and put forth a light that everyone and everybody's gonna see and feel. This town I'm talking about, Texas.
Yeah!
People, something happened today. 10 Negroes went into the Caxton High School and sat with the white children there. Nobody stopped them. Nobody turned them out. And you know what they're saying? That means they're saying that you all don't give a darn whether the whites mix with the blacks because you didn't fight against it. Well, I say, how can somebody fight what he doesn't see? They've kept the facts away from you. They've cheated and deceived every one of you. They filled your heads with filthy lies and kept you in the dark, so that when you finally do wake up, why, we're sorry, but it's just too late. Now, I'm associated with the Patrick Henry Society, which is an organization dedicated to giving the people the truth. What I'm going to tell you is going to make your blood boil. Because I'm going to show you that the way this country is going to go depends entirely and wholly and completely on you.
Yeah!
Now, you all know that there was peace and quiet in the South before the NAACP started stirring up trouble. But what you don't know is that this so-called advancement of colored people is now and has always been nothing but a communist fund headed by a Jew who hates America and doesn't make any bones about it either. Well, the commies didn't waste a second. They knew only too well, friends, that the quickest way to cripple a country is to mongrelize it. So they poured all the millions of dollars the Jews could get for them into this one thing, desegregation. They went to the courts. Now, Judge Silver, who is a Jew and is known to have leftist leanings.
Who says so?
The record says so. Look it up. Abraham Silver, for one thing, belongs to the Quill and Pen Society, which receives its funds indirectly from Moscow. So what did the judge do? Went right ahead and ordered integration for the Caxton High School. Your mayor and the governor could have stopped it, but they didn't have the guts. All right. Now, you may think the problem is simply whether we're going to allow 10 Negroes to go to our schools. That's only a small part of it. I'm in a position to know, because the Patrick Henry Society has studied the whole thing. The real problem, whether you like it or not, is whether you're going to sit back and let desegregation spread throughout the entire South. And it's an indisputable fact that there could be no other result. The Negroes will literally, and I do mean literally, control the South. The vote will be theirs. You'll have black mayors and black policemen the way they do in Chicago and New York already. Like it's not a black governor and black doctors to deliver your babies. If they find time, that is. And that's the way it'll be. Did you ever stop to think about that? When you let those 10 enter your school, did you?
Government!
Now, let me ask you. Do you people want niggers taken over?
No!
And are you willing to fight this thing down to the last ditch and keep fighting until it's over?
Yeah.
And I'm willing to fight with you.
Why, Mr. Kramer?
Why? Because I'm an American, sir, and I love my country. And I'm willing to give my life, if that were necessary, to see that my country stays free, white, and American!
Well, his predictions were right, right? Tell me anything is wrong in that little speech by that actor who later became famous as an astronaut and even later become famous as an advertiser for hotel industry. When you're young and starting out, you got to take whatever role you can get. Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy here in the bunker. Right here on a beautiful sunny day in north central Indiana. Had some rain yesterday, but it's given way to a beautiful sunshiny day and warm today and getting all kinds of honeydew stuff done today. I want to thank all you people that are getting your donations in early. I appreciate that. And, of course, for other people who are listening in, remember we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 465-801. That's where you send your donations and your snail mail. And guess what? I had a nice call yesterday evening from Richard Scutari, and he wanted to thank us all because we sent him a subscription to Mother Jones magazine, which he had requested, and he was really happy about that. Plus, we sent him, I don't know, I think it was $25 cash too, or money order, and he was real happy about that. And he's saying he's not getting enough information about what's going on in the struggle. I couldn't believe it. I always assumed that the order guys were getting all kinds of stuff. But like he says, it started out that way. You see, that's the way it is. It started out, everybody's writing and everything like that, and then gradually people slack off, and pretty soon he gets some books that I guess some people have sent, but he says he's got too many books now. You know, when you're in a small cell, you can't have a big library like here at Tommy's place. So anyhow, but magazines, you want to send him magazines, that's fine, and maybe paperback books, but he says he gets way backed up on his books to read, just like me. I got them stacked up here that I'm a slow reader because I want to digest it. I read and then I go back and read it again and underline it and then go back and so me reading is work. And so I'd rather get mine audibly. We've got these books on tape, and they got books on CDs and everything else now. We need to get our kind of books on CDs for people. We need readers. So if there's somebody out there that's a good reader with a voice like Richard Cotton or Richard Cotton used to have, that'd be great if they can do one thing for the struggle, and that's just make master CDs of books and articles too. So anyhow, that's something to think about. So Richard's happy, and I'm going to send him a lot more reprinted stuff that's coming through on the internet that he's not getting. He does have the internet access, but he don't want to use it. So that's that. And I got a note here from Marty Cox, our good buddy out there in California, who I told you was in trouble a few weeks ago, but he's recovered pretty well. He's still got a defective heart, but he sounded in good shape, and he was pointing out that they're running a lot of this old Oprah Winfrey stuff where I and the Skinheads were on there, and the one where she comes out in the audience, and I remember I was sitting right beside him, and she wanted to talk to him, and she said, do you think that blacks are like monkeys, you said? He said, that could be. She said, do you think I'm a monkey? He says, possible, or something like that. And they'll never forget that. They'll never forget that. Of course, a lot of little kids are going to look at some black people walking down the street, and they're gonna make a little bit of a mental connection there. He looks a little bit, you know, and so. Okay, there you go. I'll send that stuff out to you. It's on some black web page. I was out putting my weekly sign up on my big 8x4 fluorescent lit sign. And I said, do you know your governor is over in Germany pushing for World War III? Which he is. I've got a little something here. I may play it on here. That son of a bitch, he's going over there promoting, oh, NATO, we got to encircle these guys. We got to put missiles all around Russia, the whole bit. These cowardly sons of bitches, if you ever kind of confronted them on the street, they'd run like a sissy. But he's over there because, you know, he's getting ready to run, put his hat in the ring for president, the governor of Indiana. Yeah. So anyhow, I put that sign up there, and there'll be hundreds of people see it, and they may ask questions. The ones I think that are more likely to ask questions is the massive numbers of students, high school students and grade school students, that are bussed by my house every day. And I'm sure, since they're only a mile from school, that they're going to read that and go in and maybe ask the teacher, what does that mean? The governor's over there promoting World War III. What is that? So it's one way to get things going, I'll tell you. You got to do something every day. You got to agitate every day. If you don't agitate some way every day, you're a loser. There's no day should go by without you agitating about race, politics, ecology, banking, or something. And also, don't forget when you send your donation for the show in that we're putting up this new archive. It's going to have all kinds of old stuff that we've dug up out of our boxes and boxes of tapes and so forth that we've recorded over the years, and we've got hundreds of them. We're just getting started at it. But if you add $5 on and stipulate you want into that archive, we'll give you a password for it. But make sure you delineate between extra money for POWs and whether you want to get into the archive. There are two different things there, okay? I saw a damn good film the other night, which I don't understand why I missed it the first time round. It had some big-time actors. Robert De Niro was in it, and a couple of other well-known actors. Jackknife, it's called. You might have seen it. It's about after the Vietnam War, and the guys come back. It's a little along the veins of Deer Hunter. Of course, Deer Hunter was a much bigger in scope movie, but this is about two guys that were buddies, and they lost a buddy in Vietnam, and how it screwed up their brain and all the problems and alcoholism and anger and everything that they had to go through. And I think we always ought to see these and show them to young people. Get them prepared that don't get into this crap of going overseas and being and occupying a country. Don't let these bullshit recruiters talk you into that stuff. I think the best way is to have a few like Deer Hunter and like this Jackknife, and there's others, All Quiet on the Western Front, and the Red Badge of Glory, and there's a whole lot of them. We should make a list. I'm going to sit down and try to remember all the really great anti-war films, and we should recommend that parents that you know make sure their kids see some of that before some recruiter in a big beautiful Marine uniform all polished up comes to the high school and tells them all how they're going to all be nuclear scientists, or they're all going to captain a nuclear sub. Okay, that's one way you can work, do a good job for the race, because just think, every one of these guys you save from being maimed or killed that's white is a possible soldier in our struggle. Well, I guess you got a copy of that press release from Matt Hale that I sent out the other day. I do this as a, you know, try to boost him somewhat. He's in an unfortunate, horrible situation. But I have no confidence in these kind of things, because this is a complaint against the judicial practices of the judges or something. And you know, people tend to be so naive about how the law works. They really are. And some of the most naive are the people who come out of the right wing. They've been swallowed this stuff that there's some justice in the courts. And that's where you go to get justice. No, that's where you go to win or lose. It's an adversary proceeding. Justice is not the goal of the court. I mean, that's just the way it works. And if you got a better lying lawyer than the other guy, if you win, you win. It wasn't justice in most cases, but it was the adversary proceeding. And I noticed a lot of the young guys, once they've tangled in court, look at Craig Cobb and these guys, they have this naive view of the courts and the legal system. which is not equal. You're not equal under the law. That's all bullshit. You need to go back and read some Lysander Spooner stuff from the 1800s when he showed you that juries have power. Juries have great power. Juries can allow convictions to stand, or they can release people through jury nullification. You know, I sort of laughed at the O.J. Simpson trial summation out there because all these white people, oh my God, how did that nigga get? Oh my God, he did it. We're sure he did it. Well, how could they possibly do this? Well, it's simple. Just like down south when you had whites still had control. That if you had a bunch of good boys on that white jury and one of your buddies are up there being charged with something, punching a freedom rider in the nose, you weren't going to convict, no matter what evidence there was. And that's jury nullification. And the O.J. Simpson trial was like that. The blacks said, no way. I mean, see, I knew they were screwed, or I figured they'd get screwed, because they moved the trial from West L.A. down to downtown L.A., where the jury's going to be all black. If the jury'd have been out in West L.A., they'd have nailed him. He'd have been either getting the needle or life in prison. But that was the slickest move anybody ever played. They got him downtown, and then the black jury said, he's black, and we're not going to convict. And told the white people, just go screw yourself. And they deserve to be told that. Because when have you seen white people on a jury stick together over ideology or even religion or anything? But at least if you convince one person on the jury to vote not guilty, you walk. That's pretty good, you know, out of 12 people. If you've got a halfway decent case, many times you get one person. Like I told you on my civil case in Portland, on civil cases you got to have two. I had one good old boy there, a working class guy that voted on my side, but it took another person. Nobody ever talks about that, that at least one person on the jury was on my side. So Matt has gone into this thing, even as a law student, even as, I guess, passing his law exams and everything, somewhat naive about the way the courts work. These judges, many of them are appointed. They're not elected, but even if they're elected, what does the public know about a judge? We got half a dozen of them running right here, right now, and on May 6th, they're going to vote on them. And all of a sudden, the newspaper is full of letters about these judges, how wonderful this guy is and what a rat this guy is. Any other time during the 4 years in between, people don't really do anything. These sheep just sit back and pass the time. But when an election comes around and they get 500 million signs in everybody's yard, that's their democratic activity. And the paper... I talked to the editor today, and he said he's got 4 pages of letters today just before the election about, you know, he's a rat. No, he's not a rat. He's a wonderful guy. No, he's not. He's a good guy. He's a rat. And we were laughing about it because the editor of the local paper is almost, I don't know, I think he was a hippie one in the past. He still wears his hair long. He's got a rock and roll band, which I like to go see. And he's friendly to me. I don't expect him to roll over for me, because he can't, even if he wanted to, in the job he's got with this upper middle class Republican newspaper. Anyhow, I called him today and I said, "Do you know your governor is over? Do you know the governor's over there in Germany promoting World War III?" He said, "I wouldn't doubt it," but he didn't know about it. Half the time I go into the newspaper and give them information they've never heard of. It's amazing. Anyhow, and then I said, what else did I say? Oh, yeah, I said, hey, we had that big diversity march down here, you know, on Saturday. I was in the march. He said, you were? I said, yeah. Where were your people? I didn't see a photographer or anything, anybody there. And he said, well, I said, why wasn't there something in the paper yesterday when, you know, 40, 50 people are marching down the street with signs and everything else in a town as small as Warsaw? You'd think that would be at least back around the used car section. But there was nothing. Well, he knows the score. I know the score. And the guys that run the paper are totally in the bag with the ruling class, upper class corporations around here. Interestingly enough, that I don't know whether I mentioned it yesterday in the show, but some of the most vociferous diversity speakers were employees of these big corporations that have moved, have been here in town, Zimmer Corporation and a couple of other corporations, and there are people who've been moved in here from New York City and San Francisco and places like that. And so you can pretty well figure what their attitude, but they go beyond that. They don't just come here to work. They come here to evangelize their race-mixing ideas, yeah. And, of course, the average white person is such a sheep. They sit there and clap, you know, oh, he's wonderful, he's wonderful, she's from Cucamonga. I know those Cucamonga people are wonderful. Yeah. So anyhow, that's a story there. Let's see, what else have I got? Anyhow, when you talk to people like Matt Hale and you write to them, try to build their emotions up to be feel good and all that, and try to make them feel better and give them as much positive stuff as you can. But I mean, you know, look at like Cobb out there. I have a friend that's an attorney in L.A. And if we'd had the money, I'd have got him out there, and he'd have got him out of there before. He wouldn't have been in jail 48 hours. But I'm not going to bring a man all the way from Los Angeles for a guy who's going to plead out. I'd only do that in a real rare case of somebody who really deserves it, like me. So when I talked to my attorney friend in L.A. about this case up there with Craig Cobb, he said, oh, my God. Oh, man, he said, oh, jeez, what an idiot. Well, anyhow, that's that. And today is a day that Cobb gets the final word. After, what, how many months has he been in jail? You know, a lot of times they'll keep you in jail for months, sometimes a year, 2 years, waiting on a trial. So even if they was to say, well, it's not going to be a trial, it's just going to be the judge deciding what they're going to do with him. There's no trial because he pled out. So today's the day, so you can watch your media. When I hear something, I'll send it on to you, and you can go to the newspaper up there, and all of a sudden it slipped my mind. But anyhow, what the hell is it? Not the Bison News. Not the Bixby News, but anyhow, you can find it. Anyhow, we'll see what happens, but I'm afraid he's going to get really rammed. He might even get sent back to, pushed over the border to Canada and let them take a swing at him. You know, he's already lost his privilege of carrying, having a gun to defend himself. And he's probably going to, now he's going to be on probation, supervised probation. That means you got to, every couple of weeks or every month, go in and be interrogated on what you're doing, what you've done. And if you do anything during that time that's out of order, I mean, if you jaywalk or something, they can send you to prison for years. So when you're on probation, you got to be squeaky clean. Now, they're going to say, and this is what they usually say, and you can't have any association with people like Tom Metzger or none of those kind of people. So he's essentially, unless he wants to risk going to prison out of the picture. So there you go. That's it. Today's the day. We'll see how bad they hit him. And I want you all to see how it never pays to plead out and deal with these damn courts. And maybe it'll save your ass someday. I know it saved my ass two or three times. So I'm passing it on to you. Don't talk and don't plead out. Unless it's a very, very, very specifically good situation. And I'm saying that doesn't come along very often. But I'm the old school. Make them prove the case. Bring the evidence on. Bring it on, baby. What evidence you got that you haven't manufactured? So anyhow, that's it. Now, every once in a while, I get a email or a letter from some guy that's either been a prisoner or is a prisoner telling me there's guys going around recruiting for war. Of course, this is impossible because war has never been, even when it was in existence, never been a membership organization. Even though the court in Portland, Oregon fined the operation war all this money, and there never was any members or anything like that. We just had friends and associates. So I find that, and this has been going on for a few years, where guys that are not in the know, young guys, skinheads and stuff, in prison are approached by people who claim to be representing me. I do not recruit outside the prisons for membership. I don't recruit inside the prisons for membership. So anybody that comes to you outside the prison or inside the prison and says, Tom Metzger's given me authority to recruit you into his operation, say, you're a goddamn liar. And you might want to punch his lights out just so he'll remember that. They've even got some guys going around talking about a registry number, which is like the Hell's Angels, I guess. I don't know how exactly the Hell's Angels operate. I've never had any problems with the Hell's Angels. They do their thing. I do mine. And I like bikers, too. I must say that. However, it was the Mongols Motorcycle Club that put the hit out on me in Southern California, a contract to kill me. So those bikers I don't go for. And I understand they're totally 180 degrees out of phase with the Hell's Angels. And so if the Hell's Angels want to bring an educated ball bat to the Mongols, it's okay with me. They did that out there, had a shootout at that casino there in Southern Nevada. What the hell was the name of it? Pretty big shootout. I believe the Mongols shot a Hell's Angel and killed him along the freeway, the biker. And this fight went on into the casino. And it was a big deal. That was about 5 years ago or so forth. But anyhow, we're not affiliated with motorcycle clubs or anything like that. They do their thing. I do my thing. I hear that a lot of these clubs are into drugs, and that makes me feel bad because drugs going to young people is just bad news. And that's what I told you a long time ago. Two of my people were, when I had the Klan, and that was a membership group, two of my people were murdered by these drug-pushing bastards. So you won't find any leniency in my heart for a drug pusher. Like they say in Korea, when the Korean War was going on, it's called Seomei. They deprived those kind of people of existence. They strapped a board to the back of their head so they wouldn't get blood splatter on them and took care of them. That's the way I feel about drug pushers. Anyhow, pass it on if you know any. Of course, like I say, I put war to bed before I came here to Indiana. I mean, we talk about war. We have a lot of war stuff from the old days. We got war newspapers around, but officially, war is non-existent. It's the insurgent. So if these guys say I'm representing war, there is no war. There's insurgents. And Metzger retired war. So if you know anybody that's in prison that is getting this kind of nonsense and they're signing up to be have some... The trouble is they get some guy over them that's supposedly the boss, and then what if he says, Aryan Brotherhood, blood in, blood out? What if he tells you, Metzger says to go kill somebody in the prison? And you say, Metzger says so, I'll do it. And then you get 100 years in the electric chair. It's ridiculous. I don't recruit anybody. I only recruit minds. I want your minds. The body can follow later. But right now we need the minds. Well, I'll run a couple of sound bites from my diversity confab that we had Saturday, okay? Now, don't blame it on me. They said it.
In our community, and you'll also hear stories of love, friendship, and grace. Please keep your hearts and minds open to seeing people in a different light and from viewing the world from a different perspective. Because I believe what Mr. Rogers from Mr. Rogers' neighborhood told my kids when they were very small, which is, appreciation is a holy thing. When we look for what is best in a person that we happen to be with at that moment, we are doing what God does all the time.
You know, I'm always amazed at people who know what... First of all, know there is a God, and like the movie they're running on in the theater right now, and then the people who talk to God and hear God and knows what God's thinking. I thought God was too damn busy creating universes. I mean, millions of universes and keeping them up to shape, man, that takes a lot of work. I don't think that if there was a God, he'd have much time to pill around with couple of people here in Warsaw, Indiana. I don't think so. But you'll find with all these diversity people, at least in this meeting, they all get into the Jesus thing or the God thing sometime in their speech. They're getting, and they also very openly say they get it from their churches. Christian churches. Remember that. And all you Christian apologists out there that believe you're still racial, I don't know what to tell you. I think that the people I was being interviewed on Friday and played the show yesterday were trying to make some kind of allowances for Christianity. I can no longer do it. There's too damn much evidence to show that Christianity is a destroyer. It's a violent, perverse movement. And if you don't go along with their evangelizing and say, oh yeah, I believe in Jesus, they'll kill you. I mean, look at even Bush. He wanted to go over there and kill all the Muslims, you know. He's a fundamentalist Christian, or at least he thinks he is. I have no desire to go over there and kill all the Muslims. I mean, they Muslim all they want. They're just as screwed up as the Christians. All three of the Abrahamic religions are screwy. Whether it's Judaism, which really started the whole mess, and then you got Islam and Christianity. They're all three one flew over the cuckoo's nest deals.
I've been rewriting this speech all week, and I've rewritten it again while I'm sitting here. So I'm going to start by telling you a little bit about myself. And then one of my main goals today is to talk a little about diversity and inclusion. Can you hear me? Diversity and inclusion, better? Okay. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself and my background. And then I'm going to go into a little more about diversity and inclusion and why it's so important for us as a community to embrace it in the workplace as well as in the daily life. Okay? So my name is Francis. up in New York City. And we are making this another break in the county with regular people.
Anyhow, she's from Puerto Rico, out of New York, mixed race. Came here through the corporates. The corporates go out looking for people and to fulfill these minority openings that they must open up and have. They have to make them. You know they could fill every one of those with a white person if they really tried. But they don't. So they go out and put ads in the paper. So they get mixed race people from all over the place come in. Once they're in there, they start evangelizing for race mixing. And this gal, she was Puerto Rican. There was another gal there who was a brown Brazilian. And they were not unattractive people. I'm sure there'd be plenty of white guys chasing them around the factory or the plant. And so these people, it's funny because, you know, they really go get all excited if Christians evangelize on the job, which they should, really. But when these people come at it from a non-Christian way on the job, they seem to get away with it just by their very presence. So anyhow, that's I don't know whether you could hear that or not. I'm not going to do much of this because I was sitting a little far back from my microphone. And there's a couple of verses from one of the gals singing race mixing songs, and and this was quite a crew. That reminds me, I heard one of these big thrift shop outfits advertising to get people trained and back on their feet so they can pay taxes and be tax slaves. I thought that was funny. So there's slavery in poverty, and then they learn a couple of little things, job things that they're going to get to be. Now you're back becoming tax slaves again. It just struck me as quite humorous. Well, I want you to listen to this goofy governor of ours, but I'll tell you what. All the governors, the Republican governors, are in lockstep, and most of the Democrats. But the Republicans are actually usually the worst. I'm sorry. They love war. It's good for business. And they want to encircle Russia. Get NATO right up to their borders and have missiles all around Russia, just like the height of the Cold War. Here we go again. Listen to this dumbass.
Veterans Day was marked with a somber event in New York City.
This Brooklyn neighborhood is heavily Russian, and most of the survivors gathered here at Holocaust Memorial Park are from Eastern Europe.
I'm Romanian-born Jewish, but
in Manila.
Oh, man, I got the wrong deal. They had another Holocaust celebration in New York a couple of days ago. Anyhow, I started to put on a clip and then I screwed it up. Anyhow, let's go find the governor if I can.
National education standards, you pushed a big increase in private school vouchers and you signed a law to spend as much as $400 million on new highway projects. Question, is there a common theme there, Governor? Is there a governing philosophy in everything you've been trying to do?
Well, I really think there is. That's why we say Indiana's a state that works, Chris. I mean, we're demonstrating that you can balance budgets, have strong reserves, nearly $2 billion in the bank. You can still invest in infrastructure, in roads and bridges. You can invest in education, innovation, and expanded educational opportunity. And in the Midwest, we have one of the fastest growing labor forces in the country.
Right
and,
to work.
Our state is prospering even during these
right
uncertain
to work,
times
chief.
Because for some time here in Indiana, we've been just putting common sense principles into practice, living within our means, letting people keep more of what they earn, promoting economic freedom like the right to work. And that's why you're seeing increased investment in Indiana,
right to
more
work.
Jobs in Indiana, and I'm awful proud of the progress the people of Indiana have made.
Instead of expanding Medicaid, as was allowed under Obamacare. You got a waiver from the federal government to continue the Healthy Indiana plan, which requires participants, these people who didn't qualify for Medicaid in the past but would now, so they're over the poverty line, to pay into the system before they start getting benefits. What's the idea behind that, sir?
Well, this is an idea we developed about 5 years ago in Indiana. It's along the principles of consumer-driven health care. You know, when people take greater ownership of their own health care and are encouraged to do that in a health plan, their health gets better. They pursue more wellness opportunities. We go from emergency room care to primary care. And also it bends the cost curve over the long term. And as we move forward, I was pleased to be able to renew that program a year ago. Currently working with the administration to see if we might be able to build on the principles of health savings accounts and consumer-driven health care here in the state of Indiana. We really think health savings accounts were kind of invented in Indiana. 95% of my state employees have health savings accounts.
Uh-huh.
We have the Healthy Indiana Plan. We think it's an idea whose time has come. And we think consumer-driven health care, rather than government-driven health care or government-mandated health care, is the real future of health care in America.
Oh, yeah.
You have not confined yourself to issues concerning Indiana. During a recent trade mission to Germany recently, you criticized the way President Obama has been handling Ukraine, and you offered this suggestion. Take a look.
Declare war.
With the continued instability in the Middle East and with Putin's aggression in Ukraine, I believe we must take immediate steps to strengthen our mutual security by deploying a robust missile defense in all of Europe.
Why is the governor of Indiana talking about missile defense? And not to get too deeply into it, but how do you think setting up a missile defense in the Czech Republic or Poland is going to stop Putin, who's not involved with missiles, but is talking about sending tanks and airplanes over the border, or is at least threatening to send those over the border into eastern Ukraine? How does missile defense help?
Well, first, I was in Germany promoting the state of Indiana. We have more than 12,000 Hoosiers that are employed by German companies, and more to come. And Hoosiers have had a long-standing interest in issues affecting the nation at home and abroad, and I'm no different than that. But when I was there, I thought it was important to speak about what I believe would be the right response to Russian aggression in Ukraine. I'm pleased to hear there's more sanctions maybe coming tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
But the truth of the matter is, I think we need less talk and more deeds. And passing and moving rapidly to pass the Transatlantic Trade Partnership, and frankly, by deploying a robust missile shield throughout Europe, including in Poland and the...
Incidentally, that transatlantic trade deal just eliminates all sovereignty of the United States. If you don't know anything about that transatlantic trade deal
by this administration, I think would send a very strong message to Putin and to Russia that NATO countries and the United States are going to respond by growing stronger economically and strategically, and I believe that that's going to have a lot more influence than more sanctions and more talk. However meritorious those are, at the end of the day,
I believe
in Ronald Reagan's adage, peace through strength. Let's grow stronger on a transatlantic basis in our economies, and let's allow Poland.
You notice all these politicians that talk war the most never served a day in their life? You know, from Ronald Reagan on, all those guys, they're all for war. We'll show them, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that. I just like for them to say to Putin, well, let's get a ring over here, and Putin and Kerry get into it and see who wins. And Governor of Indiana Pence get in the goddamn ring and fight it out with Putin, and we'll see what happens.
Or they were entitled to by joining NATO. I think that's the right strategic response to Russian aggression.
All of which brings us to the possibility of...
Of course, which is not Russian aggression. Like I put on the show there, the Crimea was part of Russia for hundreds of years. And it was under a Soviet dictatorship that split it off. And then, of course, the Bolshevik Jews created this rump state of the Ukraine. in the 20s. And so it should be some kind of separate thing, I guess. I don't know. But the point is, Putin's simply saying that he wants to protect the Russian people that are living in those areas. And they keep saying he's an aggressor. He's an aggressor. Well, they're going to keep picking at it until they get a sword on.
Next month in May, you're going to be speaking before the Wisconsin State GOP
convention. Yeah.
And in June, you're going to be speaking before the Alabama State GOP convention. Forgive me for being a little bit cynical here, but it seems like you're leaving the door wide open to running for president.
Focuses entirely on the future of the people
on,
of Indiana.
Well, if they draft
me, take care of itself.
I might go.
But I am also committed to electing Republican governors.
I was going to say, why are you speaking to the state conventions in Wisconsin and Alabama?
Despite the fact that some in Washington, D.C. for decades have thought state governments as territorial outposts of the national government, what we've seen in recent years is the rise of leaders at the state.
Can you ever get a goddamn straight answer from one of these pricks? I mean, they never give you a straight answer. You know he's interested in running for president. But yet they'll all do that. Him haul around and say, you know, why don't they just say, well, I've thought about it. You know, if they'd at least say, well, I've thought about it. But they always say, well, I don't know. And if the people really draft me, if they want me badly, you know. But I don't know. Well, what he really means is don't know how much money he can get to collect. Because if you can't get $1 billion in your bank account, forget running for president.
The country, the character and the caliber of leadership that's producing real results. And I'm the time that I can spare away from focusing here in Indiana, I'm focused on electing and reelecting Republican governor.
Oh, Christ. Anyhow, that's it. And if that didn't make you barf, I don't know what will. You want to hear a Jew interview a Jew? I'll give you a little bit of it. How about that?
Bill Hagen is a former professor at Harvard University. He is the author of Hitler's Willing Executioners, A Moral Reckoning, and Worse
He's
Than
a
War.
Wonderful guy.
His writings have appeared in the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, Washington Post, the New Republic, and newspapers around the world. His new
Jews are wonderful.
Book is entitled The Devil That Never Sleeps, The Rise and Threat of Global Anti-Semitism. Please welcome to the program, Professor Goldhagen. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me.
You're quite welcome.
Hi, Kai.
Why do people who hate Jews hate them?
There are a variety of reasons. And
what's the primary reason people hate Jews?
The primary reason is they're taught to hate them. And they've been taught to hate them by their societies, by their cultures, by their families.
On what basis is the hatred?
The basis it varies from place to place. In the Middle East, an Islamic world is grounded in the Quran, and of course it picks up on the conflict with Israel, and Jews are said to be the children of apes and pigs, which is in the Quran.
But wait a minute. I think they've always been hated, at least a significant part of them. From what I can understand, the Jews, a collective bunch of desert nomads, have pretty much been hated by more people than anybody else throughout time.
In Western Europe, where there's a different legacy, Jews are accused of classical anti-Semitic charges, such as that they have too much power, they manipulate in business, they seek and new charges, such as they're seeking to destroy, that is, to exterminate Palestinians. This is widely believed in Europe, even though it is nonsense.
Why did Hitler hate Jews?
Wait a minute. What do you mean nonsense? Now, you're going to notice in this whole interview, which it's not going to be very long, he'll never say anything bad about the Jews. In other words, the Jews have never, ever done anything wrong. Now, you'll hear interviews upon interviews, and you won't hear the person say, well, you know, we didn't handle this right. This was our fault. We shouldn't have done that, and we should take the blame for that. You'll never hear that from a Jew.
Jews, whether against Jews or African Americans or pick any group you want, hate them because they've grown up in cultures that have taught them to hate it. Not because they have psychopathology or that they're sadists at heart and so on. And when cultures become imbued with racism or prejudice, in this case anti-Semitism. It's just taught in all the ways that...
Wait a minute, what do you mean imbued? Tribalism, racism, simply being for your own people has been around for a long, long time, a lot longer than racial tribalism mixing. That's an idea that the Jews want everybody else to do, but themselves, of course. Did you hear this Jew that owned the basketball team that they're taking to the cleaners? He said that the blacks are treated like animals in Israel, but yet the blacks, instead of saying, yeah, we want that straightened out, they just keep hammering on him for saying he didn't want his daughter or his girlfriend bringing those, what do they call them, the Jews? I forget the name. Wait a minute.
The girl, believe him.
Let's see. Schwartzers. I don't want you bringing those Schwartzers to the game. You can bring them home. You can take them to bed. You can perform oral sex on them. You can do anything. But don't bring them to the basketball game. Makes me look bad. Let's see what we got here. Come on. Well,
most people who are prejudiced, whether against Jews, African Americans, or pick any group you want, hate them because they've grown up in cultures that have taught them to hate it. It's not because they have psychopathology or that they're sadists at heart and so on. And when cultures become imbued with racism or prejudice, in this case anti-Semitism, it's just taught in all the ways that notions about the world are communicated to young people and they grow up believing it. Most anti-Semites historically have never known Jews. It's not based on reality.
Right.
It's based on what you learn here. If you listen to the radio...
Why do you have to know a Jew to know the Jews committed high crimes against the race? How come? I mean, I don't have to know that... I don't have to have a lion in my backyard to know lions chase gazelles and eat them. I don't have to have a crocodile in my creek to know that if there was one down and I went down and the crocodile would eat me. I mean, that logic doesn't make sense.
Google the word Jew, and one of the top sites that comes up is called Jew Watch. And it has all these crazy conspiracies. Jews is committing genocides. Jews, evil Jews. Jews as criminals. It claims to have 1.5 billion pages of truth as it presents it, but it's really none.
You mean there's no Jew crime? I mean, you see how he glosses over that? Like, instead of saying, well, yeah, there's some Jew crime, obviously. Crime in all groups and races and religions. But he doesn't do that. It's all nonsense. There's no Jew crime.
Goes to this and starts reading it and says, maybe there's something to it.
Do people who hate Jews, for example, also hate blacks?
Some do, but there are many people around the world who hate Jews in countries that where there are no, they have no interest in blacks.
Well, a large percentage of the blacks hate the Jews. I think there's a higher percentage of dislike of Jews among blacks than among whites. They seem to be more up on that situation. And black countries all over the world don't like Jews. So...
That makes it unusual among prejudices is that it's a worldwide phenomenon. And it exists where there are no Jews. 55% of people in China are anti-Semitic. There are no Jews in China. It's just...
Well, things are looking up. 55% of the Chinese are anti-Jew. And if that's true, we've won the battle. It's all over, boys. You can quit now. If 55% of the Chinese don't like Jews, we don't have to do much more.
Well, it's weird. But again, the power of the digital age, the power of mass media has transformed the nature of prejudice. It spreads everywhere like wildfire. And not only is there...
Now, when he says prejudice is making a decision not based on evidence and coming to a conclusion without researching the evidence. I believe that's wrong too, but that's not me, I'll tell you that. I research everything that I end up not liking. I mean, you know, if I don't like the Jews, it's not because that I just prejudged. I study the evidence, and you should study the evidence. Everybody should study the evidence and make a conclusion. But they misuse the word prejudice. Discriminate, that's a different word. Discriminate, you know. Everybody should have the natural right of discrimination. But prejudice? Yeah, there are people who are prejudiced that judge something without looking into it at all. But don't class our people in that.
Don't know about, because the U.S. is the great exception to this. In this sense, the U.S. really is exceptional. Where anti-Semitism is on the decline, everywhere else, pretty much, it's on the rise. It's threatening. And it's not only that these beliefs exist all over the world, but Jews are in danger. In most...
Well, that's because the United States is becoming more and more a colony of the Jews, Israel, and so forth. But why? Why? Because of Christianity. And the biggest promoter of Judaism is Christian fundamentalists. So that if there were no Christianity in North America, say we were, Buddhist or something like that, this would not be going on. People would just judge the Jews and Israel and so forth, or there wouldn't even be an Israel in the first place, and they'd come to a conclusion. But as long as the myth and the legends of Christianity and the Christ insanity exist in North America, of course, it's Jewish. The Christian struggle, the Christian religion in North America is Jewish. It's always been Jewish. But yet they'll sort of deny it. I mean, you go to Sunday school and then, you know, the whole Sunday school's taken up with studying the Old Testament out of the Torah. I wonder why this is.
Or Stars of David for fear of being attacked. And, in the Arab and Islamic world, there's no chance whatsoever. Imagine if Christians couldn't wear crosses in Europe, or in Asia, or in Latin America because they're afraid of being attacked.
Well, wait a minute. The Islamic people and the Jews were living side by side for a long time, most of the time. And most of the time they weren't killing each other. So what happened? I think it had something to do with oil, and Israel wanted to get the oil. And the United States wanted to get the oil without, saying anything bad about Israel. And so the Muslims had the oil, so they said, fuck you. If you're going to side with Israel, okay, then we're going to give you trouble.
An alarm about what's being done to Jews as well.
Do you think there are apartments... In New York City, I've lived here for 40 years. Do you think there are apartments in New York City that you can't buy if you're a Jew?
There is prejudice in this country. I'm sure there are some...
No, that... Bullshit. A Jew with the money can buy anything in New York. You won't find hardly anything that can't be bought by Jew money in New York City. That's ridiculous. You notice how the Jew changed the subject?
But as I said, anti-Semitism is on the decline in this country.
I don't agree with that, but go ahead.
Well, but
on what basis do you make that?
We have survey data. Okay. And the survey data showed that it's been declining. In fact, it's only about half the level it was in 1960.
The thesis of your book, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure you won't, is that for the first time we see this, as your statistic about China, which is stunning. But 55%, did you say?
55%. In India, it's over
30. In a country where there's no Jews.
Of course, he's polled every Chinaman. They went through all the Chinese, billions of Chinese, and checked them out. Interviewed them, of course. That's the Jews, you know. They come up with something. That's like there's 6 million. 55% of the Chinese are anti-Jew, and I hope it's true. But it's just like the 6 million. They pick a number out of the air, and then they repeat it so often that everybody says, well, it must be it.
that right?
It's global. We've entered what is can be called the third era of anti-Semitism. The first was a religious-based one.
Yeah.
The second was a modern, scientifically, social Darwinian-based one. That was a Nazi. And now we have the global form, where it's everywhere around the world. There are new accusations on top of the old ones. The images have changed. In medieval times, it was a sly Jewish moneylender, because Jews had no power, so they had to be deemed to be working behind the scenes, in league with the devil, hence the title.
That's not my history. The Jews have always had a lot of power behind the scenes and sneaking around and stabbing people in the back and acting as middlemen and so forth. Don't give me that shit. They didn't have the power.
18th century, Rothschild, the Jewish banker, was the major figure, supposedly ruining economies and controlling countries. And now we have the dominant figure of Rambo, the Jews in Israel manipulating America, the Colossus, marauding around the world with their boot on the neck of the Palestinian child. Imagery has changed. And you all.
So, in other words, the United States is free to decide whatever they want to decide, the Congress, and they're free to say bad things about Israel and the Jews, obviously. Yeah, right. Right. Try that one on.
Name another prejudice where you have an international coalition of states that promote this prejudice at home and abroad and seek to eliminate the country of the people. Eliminate. Wipe out the country of the people. There's nothing like it. And there's nothing like anti-Semitism in its life.
That's because there never should have been an Israel, because you never were native to that area at all, except for once, you know, as a tribe that may cross it once in a while. But all the mythology and the stories that the Christians promote about the Jews and Israel over there is almost 99% a lie. The Balfour Declaration was ridiculous. If they wanted to give you something like they talked about down in Africa someplace, they could have given them the land, but Israel is at a strategic geopolitical point on the compass, and that's what they wanted. So anyhow, they're going to be hated as long as you're there, until the dark races breed you out.
Live this in that kind of world where there's that kind of anti-Semitism, and the book is in part an attempt to wake people up to the real dangers. And it should concern everyone, not just Jews, but Christians. Any good-hearted person would not want to not be able to walk around with signs of his religious identity or signs of his ethnic identity for fear of being attacked. And that is what is happening to Jews who do that, even in Europe.
So our job is to get people to read this, which is a good idea. And then do what?
Well, first of all, you read it. I'll make lots of money, and then we'll print another book and another book and another book, and I'll make more money.
Countries. Look, the Arab and Islamic world is hopeless in this respect. Surveys show that 95-99% of the people in this country have extremely unfavorable anti-Semitic views of Jews. It's almost uniform in much of the Arab and Islamic world. But in Europe, we have to combat the anti-Semitism in the public sphere. The nonsense that is put forward as fact. There is a claim, 55% of Europeans believe that Jews in Israel are exterminating the Palestinian people. They're committing a genocide. They liken them to the Nazis. When in fact the reality is, Palestinian population in the occupied territories in 20 years, in the 1990s and 2000s, actually doubled.
Yeah.
And that's the big fear of the big European Jews in Israel, that just like here, with overrunning by Mexicans and niggers, over there it's the non-white Palestinians, of course. They don't want to say that, though. I mean, you know, that's sort of logical. I mean, if you're going to keep a land as small as that little pissant state of Israel, and there are people coming in on all sides and copulating all over, forget it. It's hopeless. Forget it. Go back to Poland. Go back to New York or something.
Of the people, that's more than 250 million people. Think of the numbers. Believe this anti-Semitic canard, this total fantasy, and that's another aspect of anti-Semitism that makes it different from other prejudices. It is hallucinatory, practically. So these fantasies, fantastical accounts of Jews that have absolutely...
You mean sort of like the 6 million? You mean that kind of hallucinatory, you know, how you know exactly how many Jews died during World War II? exactly?
Like,
well, you know.
Well, yeah, like, you know, on the internet. I mean, the internet is, and digital technology, which I discuss a lot in the book, and which is relevant to many other prejudices and belief systems, is incredible.
And I don't know how you combat that. I mean, I hope your book helps. I really do. But
you know, there is a belief.
Jew boy, there is no defense. You don't have a chance. Everybody hates you. And you get a perverse, almost love and sexual getting off at it, don't you? Don't you? Now admit it.
It's all over the internet. Part of Argentina, this wilderness part of Argentina and Chile, that they're going to take over and conquer and colonize Patagonia. Members of parliament in these countries have talked about this plan. It's just crazy.
Well, Jews have done it before in South America and Argentina and down that way. I mean, who do you think the slave trade started with? It started with South America. Millions more Negroes were brought in as slaves to Brazil and so forth down there by the Jews. Now, sure, they had Christian sort of Jew help, but these people, they remember, they got history books, they know how the Jews do these things, and then they say, oh, well, we're innocent, we never did anything, you know. Ah.
Daniel Goldhagen, his new book is entitled The Devil That Never Dies, The Rise and Threat of Global Anti-Semitism. A stunning statistic is that out of China, and appears to be that way throughout the world, but 55% of the people in China are anti-Semitic, and there's no Jews there. I mean, come on, man. Anyway, thanks. Nice to see you.
Thanks for having me.
You're
thanks
more
for
than
the word.
You're more than...
Well, it's hopeless, Jews. Brother Jews out there, it's hopeless. We don't have a chance, man. 55% of the Chinese, the Chinks, are after us. We got the Indians, a lot of Indians against us. We got a significant number of white people in Europe and around in the world that are against us. We got the Palestinians against us. We got all the Islamic people against us. So I think we ought to take the Kool-Aid, don't you? That's it for today. I'll be back with you tomorrow. Crazy Tommy, crazy, terrible Tommy. And if I didn't offend you today, call back in tomorrow and or tune back in, and maybe I can really get you where it hurts. But in the meantime, don't talk. Five words. I have nothing to say. I know you don't listen to me, most of you, but some do. They come around and want to ask you questions about your politics and what you've been doing and where you've been. I have nothing to say. And if they ask it enough times, say, look, I'm going to call my lawyer. Even if you don't have a lawyer, tell them you're calling your lawyer. If they want you to come down to the police station and talk to you, that's called interrogation. They may not waterboard you, but psychologically they will jewboard you. So don't go with them unless they've got a warrant or you're under arrest. Don't keep doing their work for them. And get a good court-appointed attorney. I had somebody call me the other day and says, well, I'm going to spend $1,500 on an attorney and because I want a good lawyer. I said, yeah, $1,500 is not going to guarantee you a good lawyer at all. A good lawyers are $1,000 an hour. I said, get a court-appointed attorney. Court-appointed attorneys, a lot of times you get very high-priced attorneys that have to do it pro bono, like I did in L.A. I had top attorneys helping our guys when we were up against the wall in L.A., and this myth that you can never get a free attorney that's any good is a myth. I'm not saying that every court-appointed attorney is good. A lot of times they're younger guys, but a lot of times court-appointed attorneys, you see, they have a pool of all these attorneys, and they just pick one out of the hat. Well, hell, in L.A., they picked some of the best attorneys in L.A. out for the guys that were with me. So going out like this person said, well, I think I'd be safer spending $1,500. $1,500 in the legal system is nothing. It's nothing. So I'll see you tomorrow. This is what, Tuesday? I'll see you on Wotan's Day. And go out and do something positive for the race. Agitate, do something. Even if it's one little thing today, do it.